I'm going to call the meeting to order.
I should ask those. Well, they probably won't.
And anyone in the audience who would like to come closer is welcome to. It's a very small group today.
Tom Moore.
Here.
Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Moasagie. Elaine Palencia. Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport. Ann Robin, Margaret White, Susan Fowler. We have a quorum.
Okay, great. We have the opportunity for citizen input, public participation during the first section of the meeting. We also have a number of presentations today. However, if we do have some citizen input, we can take it, and we'll ask to limit it to 5 minutes if that's feasible. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Jonathan Westfield, coordinator with the Youth Assessment Center. And I just want to come by and give the board an update on what's been going on with the Youth Assessment Center. Since we were last here, we did make our transition from our original office in downtown Champaign on Randolph Street to our new facility at 2011 Round Barn Road. And an open invitation is extended to the board to stop by and visit, see our office, meet staff, and see how our facility runs. One of the key things that we've been working on lately is developing operation agreements with our partners, and we are in the process of finalizing our operations agreements with the school districts in Champaign and Urbana. We finalized the one with Champaign recently, and we're in the process of finalizing the operations agreement with Urbana School District that will allow us the opportunity to come into the schools and better work and serve our clientele to provide services that are needed. Staff has been in Unit 4 schools since the start of the school year, and they are there daily. They are going into the schools, making contact with building administration and support staff to work on solutions, to work with the kids to help address any concerns that may arise that they may have, to get referrals so that we can get them linked and connected to support services that can better help them address any concerns that they may have. And I wanted to make sure that I came by to update the board on what's going on, just to tell you, thank you for your support, and we want to make sure that we provide you with a constant reminder of just what you've done, what you're doing in this community through our office.
Do we have any other citizen input? Okay. Then moving on to approval of the agenda. I don't have any recommendations for changes. Does anyone else on the board? Then can we consider the agenda approved? Thank you. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, great. I don't have any comments today. I had asked Tom to be president today, and then I didn't leave town, and he handed it back to me. So I think we'll just proceed with the agenda and the information that we know we're going to be getting today from guests at the meeting. So the first under new business is the Champaign Community Coalition Summer Youth Initiative presentation. And we have some handouts, color-coded. Or colorful.
Did I get Joe a nice color cut?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have an extra one.
Well, good evening, and thank you, board, for allowing Sam and I a few moments here on your agenda to talk about our summer initiatives project that really only happens because of the support of the Champaign County Mental Health Board. I kind of just start off the last really year and a half. Our community coalition has just been very instrumental in enabling us as a community to respond in a very proactive way to community needs and challenges. I've been traveling around the state quite a bit over the last year, and every community I'm in, they ask the question of how do you put something like this together and then keep everyone coming. So we really have a model community building entity in place, and you guys just really are really key to the core of enabling us to be a community response organization. So I just wanted to start off with that. So the Community Coalition is a collaborative initiative involving governmental partners, park districts, education, law enforcement, mental health, community organizations, and individual community members working together to address and solve community problems. We've been in existence since 2012, but really gained, I think, really good momentum as a group since about 2014 and 15. It's a collaborative countywide approach. Again, born out of a community tragedy, an officer-involved shooting with a local youth. Our meetings, we meet once a month at the Champaign Public Library. I've been doing community work for about 25 years. Now, I've not seen an entity that's an ad hoc kind of entity, really, you know, that has sustained and been able to build momentum over the years like this. Our monthly meetings, I gave you a picture there just to show you. That's from last week's meeting where we had a smaller crowd, and we still had 75 there talking about a community issue. So it really is just a fantastic space with good positive energy. A lot of partnerships and collaborations are happening outside of what we're going to even talk about tonight. So it really is a great space for our community. Obviously, the Mental Health Board, again, is key to our ability to be responsive to community needs and challenges. So we fall under the System of Care Sustainability area. For the third year in a row, the board has allocated $107,000 to support the work of the Community Coalition in the summer for summer activities for youth primarily. The contract is issued, a contract is issued with the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club that serves as the administrator and manages the subcontracting part of the work and agreement. Community coalition partners and agencies are who implement the programming. So again, the Community Coalition as an organization is not a direct service organization. We are a organizing entity, builder of collaboration and partnership. Each subcontractor submits proposals about their programs and activities. We work under a priority system through the coalition. So we'll start in December, meeting as first an executive committee and then with all of the community partners to determine the priorities for 2019. So, again, a contract is the Boys and Girls Club has just been a phenomenal partner, starting with the Access Initiative and then continuing through the day. Sam and his staff do a phenomenal job, so I'm going to just turn it over to Sam to just share a little bit about the Boys and Girls Club's role.
Thank you, Tracy. Good evening. From the Boys and Girls Club role in what I agree with Tracy is a very meaningful and impactful program in the summer for youth. You know, one of the things that I've often said in terms of working particularly with youth who come from difficult situations and overcoming obstacles is when you have five choices and they're all bad, you can't help but make a bad choice. And a lot of what this effort through the Community Coalition is about is about putting positive choices in front of kids, doing a very open time in the summer where there are a lot of opportunity to make some bad choices. And I think the summer initiative has served greatly with its focus on youth to kind of mitigate those issues that youth in the community are trying to navigate during the summer. What the Boys and Girls Club does in this effort is to really bring together the structure for operating the effort. We serve as the administrative agent, so to speak, for the activities that take place. We have developed application, a program submittal process, convening with the partners who are at the table at the start of the summer, late May, early June. We have a joint meeting with all of the potential partners. Tracy is at that meeting along with myself and our fiscal staff person, Ray Pratt from our office, who monitors the budgets that and spending that comes through. At that time, we explained the expectations with respect to submitting a program plan for each partner. That includes their program outline. It includes the projected number of youth that they intend to have involved in the program, the budget itself, and the various budget areas that they plan to provide or plan to have submitted throughout the summer. We also explain what we call for at the end is a program assessment that also follows up to see where each program winds up in the achievement of the targeted number of youth spending and so forth. So that process starts with a joint meeting. Those proposals are submitted. They are reviewed by Tracy in representation of the coalition and myself. We review those to make sure that each of the programs are within the total budget, which is allocated from the Mental Health Board. And from there, each program is notified as to the approval for each submittal. We do receive, or in the process now of winding up, we have two programs that are finishing up their assessment process with reporting on their activities, outcomes, and such for the final report that we also submit to the Mental Health Board at the end of next week, which will go in. And at that time, we aggregate all of the data that comes in terms of outcomes, number of youth served, financial results from the entire summer, and that report is given by way of the report to the Mental Health Board at the end. Tracy and myself also sit down at the completion of each summer and just kind of take a look at how each of the partners how things went in working with them. Tracy does a great job throughout the summer of touching base, in particular with each of the partners, with visiting the programs at various points throughout the summer, things like that. So we both have an opportunity to do that, sit down, kind of see how things went, where things might need to be addressed for next year and things along those lines. So we do kind of an informal kind of touch base between the two of us as we kind of take a look at the total data that comes in. So with that's an overview of the administrative functions that the Boys and Girls Club provides.
So the exciting part, right? So this year we really focused on four key areas: arts and culture, recreation, academic enrichment and leadership, and then community engagement. These are kind of my estimates. You know, we had 13 different initiatives that we funded and well over 500 youth impacted. Sam will have those exact numbers, but I know I feel very comfortable tonight just saying I know it's, you know, over 500 youth that we were impacted through this summer with the different projects. So in the arts and cultural area, and I would say one of the things we wanted to, so maybe the philosophy has been the past couple of summers is to get as many youth engaged in as many different things as we could to touch as many. But we've really seen, excuse me, in the community a need for a more individualized approach to serving youth. So the numbers already are less than what we've done the past couple of summers, but I think you'll see some of the unique things that we've been able to do, again, from a more individualized place. Oh, thank you there. So we started out in the Silver Water area, and again, think about this work and in the whole as it relates to Champaign and Urbana primarily, but really countywide also, and looking at targeted areas where we have not a larger number of non-traditional youth, or the area might be more impacted by crime, or the area might be one that just needs more supportive services. So that fits. Sam, you're getting taken care of also. So the Silver Water area is in southeast Urbana, and it's an area that we've had a number of challenges and issues and difficulties over the past couple of summers. And so we've been working there. This year has just been phenomenal. Last year, as you may recall, we took a group of private business owners, social work community, and residents up to Chicago to see a neighborhood working together kind of model in the south side of Chicago. So this year we've had a number of monthly community neighborhood activities. So we were pleased. The representatives came to our last coalition meeting and talked about the fact that how empowering and building of a neighborhood we've done with our work the last couple of summers. So this, again, is one of the highest areas for calls for service with law enforcement. Those are down significantly. We've only had one shooting incident since April in this area, and I think that number last year was somewhere in the 3 to 6 area. So one shooting incident, that was earlier in the spring, so we've had none the entire summer. And the person, Giovanna, who's just a ball of energy, came to our last coalition meeting to talk about a common Halloween event they're having this summer. So residents are going to be going to each other's, but they're also going to be going to the neighbors and the homes, and it's organized and it's coordinated, and it is just really, really phenomenal. So really pleased with the work we've been able to do. Sam Smith has been primarily the point person, but we've got full participation from law enforcement, the mayor's office, city of Urbana, Urbana Park District. All of us have been coming together to work over there. So there was a nice article in the paper in August just talking about this good work. We didn't quite get the coalition mentioned that I wanted in the article, but that's okay. What's most important is what's happening there, right? So I just wanted to share that with the board because I'm just really pleased about that. One of the other initiatives is the Banks Bridgewater Lewis Academy. Back in the 60s and 70s, the drum corps in the north end of Champaign was world-renowned. And it was a entity that just traveled around the country as a drum corps. So we reenacted or brought it back last year. So this was our second year with the drum corps. The kids have been traveling around to different community events, and they perform and do those things. It's a culturally diverse group, so it's not all African-American kids as it was back in the early days. So Dr. William Patterson is a professor, associate professor in the College of Engineering on U of I's campus. His focus is working with kids in the neighborhoods, getting them to understand their work, but he also has a STEM focus. So we had a project, I'm not the biggest fan of his name, the title he calls his program, but it's Ghetto Genius. And what it really just talks about is getting kids to understand their neighborhood strengths and those things that are available to them and bringing out their creativity. So again, it's a STEM-based project done in partnership with the Boys and Girls Club this summer, a new project. But really kids, so there's two parts to it. One is kids, you see Street College listed in there. He, as a professor, he taught his class this summer in Douglas Park, and we incorporated community kids with college kids. And you see robots there, you see drones, you see they were building with wood a speaker, and this young lady in the middle became the DJ, so she DJed, and while they worked on the projects during the summer. So they did that three days a week this summer. Really a creative project. Will and I were in Dayton, Ohio last week presenting this at a national neighborhood conference about this this work. So just really fantastic work that we started here. A couple of things to highlight in the recreation area. First String continues to be one of the staples that we support, promoting team building through baseball. These kids do participate in the community Little League and really just great. Peter McFarlane and a whole group of adults volunteer their time in the field and working with the young men, exposing them to, again, teamwork and team building through First String. We continue to be a major supporter and partner with Reverend Comer and the Youth for Christ group and Midnight Basketball. Every Friday we have somewhere between 125 and 175 youth in the
First String won Twin Cities.
Oh, okay. They're reminding me. I forgot. First String Little League Baseball team won the Twin City Baseball League this year. Right. So I forgot about that. Thanks. Thanks, Jonathan. All right, so Midnight Basketball, anywhere 125 to 175 middle school and high school age youth, boys and girls, are in three different gyms now in Champaign. We continue to talk about if we want to use this space or do an Urbana initiative, and we do have Urbana kids that go over there, but, you know, Reverend Comer and his team of volunteers do a phenomenal job, and it's hard finding volunteers for Friday nights, right? They want to give that time up, but they do a great job and are really committed to the kids. For the second year, we had a three-day engagement activity in the Garden Hills area. This year, we were able to add more support to Reverend Comer for this work. So we were in Garden Hills for 3 days. They had over 100 kids and families that they fed lunch. Kids played sports. They gave out individualized and team awards at the end of the day. Really just getting, again, a neighborhood with a number of different challenges for neighbors to get to know one another, get the kids out, constructive activities. And so he's also added a college tour, a college trip, that they did 2 weeks ago, and I think we took 40-something students up to Chicago for a historically black college fair. They saw a football game at Soldier Field and got to do and learn about college through the Historically Black College Network, and so we took 40 kids up for that. A couple of things to highlight in the academic enrichment and leadership area. Not on My Watch is a new initiative that we supported in the Rantoul area. Herbert Burnett is the facilitator of this initiative. It started out as just a engagement piece for kids in the morning before school earlier in the year, and it turned into a full-fledged summer project with 40 to 50 kids a day doing academic enrichment, leadership, team building skills, and you see the big picture in the middle where they got an opportunity to go to Chicago for a trip as well. Another fantastic opportunity for kids that just don't get to see and experience much out of their neighborhoods to expose them to some different things. Pathways is a project through Pilgrim Church, all girls focused. So again, the individualized approach. And so these young ladies went through academic enrichment, but also just some girl specific training and programming. And off the top of my head, I think we had about 16 or 17 young ladies each day, but I'm not positive on that number, but it was somewhere in that realm. And again, first-year initiative also that we were able to do. We've continued to do employment for kids in Champaign and Urbana. Had 40 kids again this summer working. And then in Champaign, we had 110 kids employed and going through summer. I'm going through job training, preparation types of activities, resume building, and all those things. Community engagement. So we hosted a town hall meeting in June to talk about our community violence. We had over 80 people packed in. No one from the fire marshal's office came in that night. But really a fantastic evening to talk about our community challenges around gun violence and what can we do more of. You see an arrow on someone who was in the audience and participating that night, so we wanted to highlight the fact that Lynn was there and participating, not only as an executive committee member for the coalition, but in the activities and events that we have taken place. The meetings after the meetings, right? So we continue to work on race relations as a community engagement initiative and activity. The film Racial Taboo, I've mentioned before, we are in the process of evaluating that as a tool. We've shown it 16 times as a community, and we've had over 1,600 community members see the film as a discussion starter around the topic of race. I put the kids in the middle. So there's a new film Brian Grimm has produced called Paradise Principles. And those local youth here are prominently featured in the film. So I'm going to be screening it tomorrow. I know we're going to be showing it through the park districts and the Forest Preserve as a training tool around cultural competency, something we've been doing the last couple of years. So we showed the Racial Taboo film to all of the staffs for Champaign Park District, Urbana Park District, and the Forest Preserve. And again, their staffs had a chance to have conversations about race and what it's like to work in those environments and the whole bit. So we've made a lot of progress around race relations in our community, and the subject always is what's next. So you see the other two pictures are the planning meetings we've been undertaking the past few months. We are going to show Racial Taboo or a film as a tool. We're talking about some youth engagement activities around race relations. And then we're always looking at how we continue community-wide to push the issue of race relations and race-based conversation. That's the only way we're going to be able to impact it, is to be able to address it and talk about it. We continue to do our Walk as One events quarterly. We had one last month in Shadowwood and Garwood trailer parks, which are primarily Latino-based living spaces. And so normally our Walk as One events, we get out as in teams. We have all kind of volunteers from across the community, and we go door to door passing out information. We go out through the neighborhoods, but with the challenges we're having around immigration and ICE and all those things right now, that wasn't a safe space for the Latino families to have law enforcement and all kind of folks coming up to the doors. So we just had a common space and allowed them to come to us. And so you see, we just had a fantastic day and attendance and community event that I wanted to share. We also took a focus at one of our community coalition meetings on the immigration issue and kind of its impact that it's having across the community. And then I want to finish with an initiative that we put in place this summer. We've seen an increase. It started in the spring, late winter, spring, around youth-based violence in our schools. And we had some really tough, focused conversations. We had a big, huge fight at Centennial High School where a young person was severely injured. And it really hit the crisis point where we had to really decide that we had to approach this. So we put a pilot project together. We brought in some identified youth that were on law enforcement radar. They'd spent time with Jonathan in the Youth Assessment Center, and the schools were looking at their behavior and activity in not the most positive and constructive way. We started with 25 youth. We ended up with 16 in the summer project. They went through 6 weeks of leadership development, conflict resolution, you know, goal setting. They came up with the name Goal Getters. Really was a phenomenal summer initiative. We are continuing it during the school year. It's worked so well for these young men. 15 out of 16 finished. So one of the reasons I wanted to just highlight this, because we didn't use summer initiative money for this. We used regular coalition money. But the young men were getting services, so they participated in the Ghetto Genius Initiative. They participated in the midnight basketball activities. They had to have additional outside of the program activities that they were participating in. And so we're doing the most important work of closing these gaps and these silos. And so one of the great parts about our summer work that you support is that we're able to work with smaller organizations. We're able to work with individual people who don't have a non-for-profit number, who don't have those types of things. That's where the Boys and Girls Club comes in to help with those base performance things that are required for you, but enables them as experts in their areas of working with young people. And so this is a pilot model project that we're going to get a lot of positive about. One of the young men who is a senior at Centennial is in a dual program at Parkland. He wants to be a welder, and we were able to get him in a program, and he made the honor roll out at Parkland through the summer with his grades and his performance in this project. And so I wanted to just thank the board again, because again, we're able to blend and mesh and work together with these projects and a more individualized approach to addressing these kids and their needs. So that's what we wanted to share with you tonight. I'm trying to keep it short as possible, but a lot of great things happening. And Sam and I'll take questions for you, but just thank you, thank you, thank you. So
I want to commend you, because prevention is everything. And I'm obviously, I'm a data geek on this stuff, and we are spending only $214 per student. That's just based on the over 500, so I know you said there are additionally more. And if we think of the cost-effective, not only cost-effectiveness of that, but what a difference opportunity makes in kids' lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd also like to just comment on how it's wonderful to see the collaborations and the leveraging of resources. It's not always leveraging money. It's leveraging people, resources, and coalitions or collaborations. So I remember when we had the discussion several years back at the end of the Access Initiative, should we continue? And this is one of the best investments, I would say, the Mental Health Board has engaged in. Again, echoing what Margaret said, not much money for quite a bit of bang. And if we don't reach our youth, we won't have a community to live in that we will want to live in. So thank you for what you're doing.
So two things about that, Dr. Fowler, that I think it's really important. One is that You mentioned access and our work around trauma. We are talking about being a trauma-informed community in more spaces than we ever have, and it's, so that means it's taken about 10 years to connect and click in. But we started our trauma work with summer initiative money. Our trauma work is funded now as a contract through CUAP, but in a much larger scale. And Karen and her team are all over the community promoting and training and connecting trauma-informed practices. We were just meeting again last night talking about our community violence issue, and we have to understand how traumatic these experiences are on those neighborhoods and the residents and those folks that live in those areas. And so putting a trauma response team to go out and intercede and work with families and get people to talk and get people to deal with their traumatic experiences is huge. And so you think about all the community violence we've experienced over the last couple of weeks. You think those kids aren't going to school the next day, traumatized, hearing gunfire, being up, hearing all that commotion is going on in their neighborhoods. It has to have an impact. So now our schools are connecting. So if a kid is coming from that area and not real focused the next day, maybe we understand from a trauma-informed lens why, instead of dealing and treating that as a behavioral issue and disciplining them, we start to figure out how these things are connected for our kids. So again, it started with summer initiatives, and now it's just really blossoming community-wide.
Tracy, you and Sam, you guys have been doing this for a while now, and you mentioned a young man who went to Parkland and wants to be a welder. What do you see, how's the summer impact the kids for the rest of the year? How do they do in school? And do you have any idea of the carryover from the summer program to the rest of the year?
So, I mean, you know, Sam is in day-to-day contact with young people in a new and great and exciting way, so he can certainly address it from the club's perspective. The go-getter kids, we are staying with them. So it was not only during the summer that we worked with them, but in fact, yesterday we have a monthly lunch check-in. So the community volunteers that came and taught those sessions comes to Centennial and Central to check in, and then Monday nights is their liaison meeting where they come and, again, focus on issues. And grade monitoring and discipline issues, all of those things are what's being checked and worked on. And, so we will have that data about how they're performing and all of that.
I know from the at least the club side and as well as what I've seen with the summer initiative work just from afar is that there's definitely a carryover from the summer into the school year. One of the things that these programs do, keeping the kids engaged, keeping those involving them in activities that's going to keep that thought process going, and things along those lines. One of the things it does is really mitigate some of that learning loss that often happens in the summer when kids kind of make those gains during the summer. We kind of see them start to make some of that, those kind of academic movements, as well as those connections in school that just gets them more feeling more connected just to the academic process or the learning process. And then what often happens in the summer, data and studies show, is that all of a sudden it's just cut off and there's nothing that goes on. And so particularly for kids who come from many of the family situations, community situations that are involved in the summer initiative programs, and again, going back to the Boys and Girls Club, the kids that we see at the club, what often happens is because that's cut off, they regress from the gains that they were able to make during the school year. And so that start of the school is teachers have to start over. You know, those connections have to begin all over again. And so it's kind of a two steps forward, one step backwards. And so the opportunity to stay engaged in these types of activities mitigates that learning loss and that those disconnects that often take place. And so when kids do start the school year, they're able to start at a much better place than they otherwise would. So I know that's one of the things that we see, certainly, from the kids that we're involved with.
Am I correct, then, in assuming that the summer initiative should be understood to be an integral part of the community coalition's work all year round? That even though this is called the summer initiative, it sounds to me like it's pretty central to the work that the coalition is doing.
Well, youth development is one of our core key areas. And as we talk about a number of these challenges that surface during the year, engagement is key, right? So our ability to stay connected with the youth, as Sam just so perfectly talked about, staying connected with these kids. And most of these kids that we work with through the coalition are the kids that are the non-traditional kids. So they've struggled in school. They've struggled in the community, and they struggled at home. So the ability to, you know, for the go-getter kids, a perfect example. I mean, we put a lot of formerly incarcerated folks in front of them that can't talk to them and be part of their schooling because they're not allowed in the school buildings. But through a program like this, they can come and talk about their mistakes. They can come and share they were where they are with, you know, fatherless homes and all, you know, a lot of the challenges that these kids have. There's folks that have walked in those steps and can share with them, you know, the right way. They can convey a message that I can't, right? So it's important that, so yes, this is critical to the work of the coalition and our ability to address our youth needs.
Thank you.
Make a comment after having been to a couple of these meetings. If you look at the first photo, these coalition meetings, where there are 75 to 100 people there, is a very diverse group of people. And I don't mean just diverse in terms of race. I mean diverse in all kinds of ways that you can think of. And so it is, as best I can tell, a group that is reaching the community in a variety of ways, and people are committed to this thing. So
I'm glad you're traveling around the country and talking about it. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work. The next item under new business is funding priorities. We want you to be really well prepared for spring and the evaluation of proposals. So Lynn and Mark have included a briefing memorandum on the funding priorities, and I'll turn it over to Lynn.
We did, I think after I first talked to you about it, I did find last year's, and I put them together with the Microsoft tool to do a comparison, and it was just like a spider web. So it may not look very different from last year's or from the current year priorities that you're using, but it's different in lots of ways. The most important one to me is that I figured out how to create accessible documents per the accessibility expert who reviews our websites every year and says, so this is a huge accomplishment, and all of the documents that I prepare from now on should be accessible, so when people are trying to read them online, they can actually tell the difference between a heading and the body. So in the body, there are some changes within. We tried to keep the goals that broadly that you're current, well, the priority areas that you're currently using broadly the same, but the details within them are a little bit different, sort of moving along with what we learn each year. This is the first draft. We will send it out to agency providers and some stakeholders, too, for comment. So during the next couple of weeks, we'll be asking for input toward a final draft. It would be really great. I would love to present you with a final draft at the November 14th meeting, which means we need to have it done November 6th, which is a really short turnaround time. So if you have any questions or concerns about this set of priorities, you know, feel free to email us. Chandra also dug in this year pretty deeply into some of the language and found some places where the language maybe wasn't as clear as it should be. So you might find, like, this is not, in my mind, it's not substantially different, but, like, now it's maybe actually can be understood, where it was a little tangled in the last couple of years. So I appreciate that input. You know, people were very indulged me with a quick turnaround time on this document. So I don't know if you have any, if you've had a chance to look at, if you have any questions right now about it or suggestions for what we should do differently.
I was glad to see that two-year proposals were still under consideration for 2020. Because I do think that some of the proposals we fund don't need to come to us on an annual basis. So that's my only comment.
So maybe in the review process, we should be actively talking about which contracts to do on a two-year basis. Okay.
Along the lines of Susan's comment on page 9, I like the idea that we're continuing to hammer on the idea of stigma and anti-stigma. I don't think that's inconsequential to these programs and to their effectiveness and to our ability to impact the broader community with regards to mental health and mental health issues. So I like that we're doing it. We can do it bigger if possible, but I really like that.
So, well, first, I agree with what Tom just said. With regard to this, I had a question about the two-year application, that a very last sentence in here, right? It says, so I can't recall where we had left off in our conversations about it, but from what was just said, it sounded like we might think about inviting some programs to do that. But I'm not sure we necessarily want to have it, say, be that open. Because it seems to invite people to ask for that the way it's currently written. So I would hope that if we're going to consider it, we do it in a more request way. So we might request some programs, or in some way to indicate that not everybody should do that.
Right. I think that over time we've identified some programs that we're pretty comfortable with having recurring, and we were concerned at one point about tying up the funding too much, but we, I think, have a much better handle now on the funding for the Mental Health Board and projections for the funding. So I agree, Julian, it's not an open invitation for two-year funding for anyone who would prefer to ask for that, but having pre-identified some programs that could be reviewed only every other year so that we don't spend quite as much time on reviewing if we have a good history.
So my comment is only to suggest that we should be careful, since this is going to be circulated around to everybody, to how we say it.
This language has actually been in the document for a few years. And I could just strike it, because you're right. This is one of those things that you can discuss during the review process or in the contracting process. It doesn't need to be in here at all.
Well, to say some programs may be considered for, or something like that, as opposed to.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's all. And that's just simple, not that big a deal.
Any other comments? Okay. I have just been reminded that one of our members has a birthday today, and so keeping that in consideration, we will continue to move through the agenda if we can. Happy birthday, Joe.
Nice spending you with us.
Yes. Okay, C, draft funding guidelines and audit policy. At pages 13 to 34. And again, Lynn, do you want to highlight some of the issues?
There, we just haven't touched these in a long time. That's the reason we pulled them out. There is also, in the DD set of contracts, there was a program that we really liked that went away because of our requirements. And when she went away, she wrote a letter about the requirements that were burdensome for a small organization. So we took that to heart. And so when I was going through these, because it's been so long, we thought, and we talked a lot, the staff have been talking about this for almost a year, about things we understand to be burdensome and what we can change and where the risks might be. So a whole lot of it is typos, language changes, updates. And then there's a list of the revisions that are more substantial that we're suggesting. And that list includes acknowledgement that there are a couple things I'm not finished figuring out. Like, we've got four CPAs who really want to help us with this, but they're like, it's like catching fireflies. they're either had to go to Chicago and miss the meeting or sick or something. So we're getting input from those people on a very, like, one question at a time basis. And just to understand the risk with some of the changes. And so far, it looks okay. But one thing that's not in here that I discovered since I presented you with this draft is that we probably ought to, one of the most major changes is we would like to stop requiring an audit for everybody with a total revenue of under $300,000, because that's the state's threshold. But we would require something else, and that's a financial review. All the CPAs are so excited about it, but they won't tell me what it should look like, so I can't provide details yet. I did discover since then that it might be better for us to say those organizations under 300,000 total revenue have the option of an independent audit or a financial review, so that we give them the choice. Because for some of those smaller organizations, an audit actually is preferable. They might have a compliance issue that they're trying to resolve that an audit will help them resolve, or they might be trying to build as an organization and apply for funding where an audit is required. So I think that that's another substantial change that's not in this big mess, but should be. There's also, we reviewed in the course of this work, a number of other 708 board requirements, and we discovered that we're doing a lot more monitoring, that our expectation of our own staff is a lot harder than what other 708 boards do. So I didn't put it in here, but I think what I would like to do is reduce the on-site visit requirement from once a year to once every 2 years, and then add a requirement for all these desk reviews, because we're doing at least 4 desk reviews a year for every organization and every program, and it's incredibly time-consuming. It usually results in significant follow-up with the programs, sometimes ad hoc site visits to solve problems. So that seems, I wanted to capture that. That's not in this draft. I apologize for not having noticed it before, but I think that's an important change that we should make as well. So then the last thing is, what's not done is incorporating the addendum into the guidelines. Like, it should be just part of the guidelines. So that's an editing problem that I haven't quite got my mind around. So if there are other changes, or if you are concerned about any of these, I'd be very interested in your input. And again, I have an ambitious deadline, but it is not necessary.
So I'd like to recommend that we contact Lynn individually about any concerns, because this is still very much in the development stage. And if we take too much time to discuss it here, it may actually confuse the issue rather than clarify the issue. But I wanted to commend Lynn and the staff for really taking by the horns the issue of how do we do the business of the Mental Health Board and the DD Board, from desk reviews to site visits to what should agencies do in terms of an audit or a financial review. So I think this is really important, but I think it's also at a level of detail that staff should be grappling with, and a final level maybe reviewed by the board, but not developed by the board. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because you know what's going on more intimately than we do as you work through it. I know Julian wants to say something.
I have an educational question for me, at least, if maybe for others, I don't know. I didn't understand the difference between an audit and a financial review. Can you tell me what that is?
They're both done by an independent audit firm, but the cost difference is significant. You know, our agencies haven't enjoyed huge cost of living increases over the last 10 years, but audit firms have raised their prices. So now the cost of an audit is around $7,500 for maybe a moderate size. We have some very large, complicated organizations represented in the room who might be spending even more than that on their audits. A financial review can cost about half that, and what it lacks the opinions. So it's confirming financial statements from an outsider's view, but they're not giving opinions about those. So we can do some of that. Like a smaller organization with lower revenue than 300,000, we can actually talk to them and see if they have enough adequate internal controls in place, things like that. It's easy for us to do in the site visit process. But so instead of paying a CPA and an audit firm to do, I have a little bit of detail about the financial review and what it would consist of, but it's pretty minimal. It's a review of statements by an independent firm.
Does that help?
I want to understand.
Yeah.
I do. I don't understand it yet, but yeah.
Tom?
I think these last two documents that you guys have presented to us are incredible in what you have done, and the level of detail is just unimaginable. And this last one, it's a roadmap. If you get lost, it's your own fault because everything apparently is right here. So I think you've done a great job in putting both of those two together, and there should be no question about these things.
Then we would really blow your mind in November because we're redoing all the application stuff.
Any other comments on C? We're impressed. Keep on the work.
This was hard.
Yes.
Because it is kind of boring.
Yeah, but important. Okay, 7, agency information. Of the three representatives in the room remaining, do we have any agency information to be presented today? Okay, moving on. Thank you very much for being here. Under old business, I think just for your review and reminder, the schedule and allocation process timeline is on page 35 to 38, in case you want to update your calendars. It's there. But why don't we move on and just note that it's there. Lynn, do you have any CCDDB information to share with the group?
They did not meet today. They have a meeting next week with approximately this same business. They have a few other things. They asked for more information about all the anti-stigma activities, so we're going to provide them with kind of a, you know, little bit of detail about the past and some of the current activities. They no longer support the anti-stigma film, but they do support some of the associated activities. So I was glad they asked. They also asked a question in response to a crisis that parents are experiencing, who want just very simple, straightforward respite for their children. We learned that DSC had done respite for infinity many years, and they lost that contract, the state-funded contract, which is just very, it can be a very small amount of support for a lot of people. And so we just sort of looked into that, like what we know now what to expect, and that there won't necessarily be relief until the summer. So those are the differences between this meeting and that meeting, essentially. That's the different business. But they're about the same place that you are. And on the – so – no, that's it for DDB. Okay.
Moving on, we have the approval of the Mental Health Board minutes from September 12th and September 26th, which are on pages 39 to 44. The minutes require an aye vote of approval and a motion, and I believe that there's a correction to one of the minutes. Okay. So why don't we... Go ahead and make your correction, Julian.
Since I was absent from the meeting,
I could not have voted to second the approval of the expenditures. It appears on page
43. It says, Dr. Rappaport seconded the motion
made by Dr. Robin. Because I wasn't
here.
Okay.
So
was it you? Said he was impersonating.
My lost twin brother.
Is it a financial thing?
My guess is it was either Joe or it was Kyle.
It was Joe. He just confessed.
She was like, I'll remember. It's probably Julian.
All right. We'll strike that. And it's a matter of checking the tape. I think that it's a voice vote was taken and it passed. I don't think we really need to worry about it. How about a board member seconded the motion?
I'm sure she would check the tape. I don't think it's a problem.
Well, that's okay. I think for the time being, though, okay. We can just say a board member. Okay. Okay. Were there any other corrections? Okay. So we can have a motion and further discussion if you want, but do I have a motion to approve the September 12th meeting minutes? That was study session. Okay, Julian has made the motion. Do we have a second? Well, he was here for the 12th. It's the 26th, he wasn't. Judy seconded. Any discussion on the 12th? It was a study session. I was absent, so I'm not going to vote. All those in favor? Okay. Three abstentions. Any opposed? Okay. Moving on to September 26th with the correction that Julian requested. Do we have a motion? Someone who is present at the meeting?
So moved.
Moved by Kyle, seconded by Joe. Okay. Discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Okay. And abstentions would be perhaps Julian and Margaret. Okay, great. The executive director's report. Thank you, Lynn, for writing a report. It was really helpful to see it in writing as well as to hear it from you. And once again, I would just like to say that all of the reports from 45 to 52 are quite impressive and very informative. So I would like to turn it back again to Lynn to see if she wants to add to the report. And then if the board members want to comment on the staff consultant reports, we can do that.
Well, I don't... If I start adding to the report, I might never stop. And we need... It's Joe's birthday. But I wanted to go through the upcoming dates. The green packet on your desk is your board packet for the study session next Wednesday. And that's a really important conversation. We're inviting some other guests to come to that. That's about crisis services. And crisis services have changed a whole lot, just since July. So it's really important. We did a little dry run of this at an agency meeting and really good questions. So this will be a little bit more detail from the providers. October 29th is not an official meeting of the board or a study session, but if two of you want to join us, we're having a meeting here during the day on Monday the 29th with people from the State Department of Mental Health who are coming to talk to us about recovery peer supports and certified peer support. It's certified peer recovery supports. Is that the right certification? And RAP, which is a more intensive training, and we're going to have a whole bunch of people attending that who are already doing peer work, but not necessarily paid peer work, and then some who have an interest in developing that. So I'm very hopeful that something could happen from this conversation. It's a state, and they've got some information from other states who've successfully done peer supports at the crisis level, which is so cool. And so anyway, if there are just two of you who want to come, I can send you the invite. We can't, if we have more than two of you, it turns into an open meeting, which is okay. 10 to noon on Monday the 29th in here. Is anybody else interested in an invitation to that? Okay. Well, we'll send the invite to you, Julian. Then you have a regular meeting on November 14th. As I hinted, I have a really ambitious agenda for that meeting. I would love to bring you a final draft of the 3-year plan. Mark Scott, he's been working on that. There's a little bit of input to it, some changes that we talked about last month, in fact, and then a final draft of this funding priorities document, final drafts of the funding guidelines. Love to get those things done. And then something that you don't have to take any action on, but I want you to see, are all the changes that we're making to the application. Because we've really overhauled the system. We're really trying to make it easier for the agencies to use, and then on the other side of it, easier for all of us to review the products. And then there's some interoperability being introduced from the application itself into the report forms that agencies are required to do to hopefully streamline their work throughout the year. So that's what I want to give you on the 14th. It may be too much, but we'll see. And then on November 28th, there's a study session here, and the person coming is an expert in supportive housing and homeless services, and he's with Corporation for Supportive Housing. He's been here a few times. He's quite familiar with Champaign County and has done a lot of work with DD organizations and with NAMI. And he's a board member of the ARC of Illinois. So he asked me to set up a whole bunch of other meetings with him. He's really excited about our new housing authority director. So he has a meeting with him. A meeting with the continuum of care. So I hope that you can all attend that study session. The DD board will also be here. He's a really great advocate for the people that we're most concerned about. And I think November 28th is a great time to start talking about homelessness. Mm-hmm. So maybe a couple months too late, but it's good to get him when we can. So that's.
Any comments or obviously the staff are working very, very hard, really tackling big things. Report from staff. We have Mark's report. We have Kim's. We have Chandra's. We've got a budget report from Chris. Let me just invite staff who are present if you want to add anything. It's really great to see how busy and active and engaged you are.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Somewhere in my report is a reference to an agency that we had had a reporting issue, and that issue has been resolved, and their payments have been are back.
Great.
In. So, and then Lynn mentioned the issue of homelessness. This will probably show up in my staff report, a brief remark, but I did attend winter emergency shelter press conference that was held on Monday at the Time Center, where they talked about the services that will be available this winter, And actually, they passed out a guide of what those resources will be.
Fabulous.
So I'm circulating that in the office, and if you're interested, I can have copies available to the board. So.
Great.
It's not in my report, but I did want to note that two people we're funding, Karen Sims and Tracy Dace, are being honored by the NAACP.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I ask Sandra?
Sure.
Who attended that trauma training session for case managers? I don't mean names, just what was...
That would have been, that's probably something that's in Kim's report.
I think it's in Chandra's.
They don't get Kim's report.
Oh, okay, then it's something
it's the first item in Chandra's report.
So it was stakeholders, so it was members of the trauma training, the trauma collaborative group that meets with the afternoon. The case management, it was for people who work with persons with disabilities. That was the morning training.
So what they were from what agencies, I guess?
All different agencies around Champaign County. Yeah, it was a packed space.
Oh, good. That's what I was wondering. Yeah. I keep worrying.
Yeah, like it was like a waiting list. I couldn't even go into that one.
I couldn't. We had to leave.
Yeah.
Because it was too full.
Like I sat out in the hallway.
Okay. But there were also family members there. And that's really important because they're like, they know all about this. And I think for them it was really wonderful to get it put into words and a structure.
Is not a criticism at all. In fact, it's the opposite. It would be great if when you get a meeting like that with so many people and it's a big success, you should tell us.
Yeah, it's a big success.
So we could appreciate it as more than just a sentence in here.
Yeah, that that particular event was organized by Kim and Chandra. And Kim is actually planning a series of those.
Great.
So it wouldn't show up in mine. It wasn't something.
No, I'm just talking about Chandra's report.
I'm sure she'll make a note about that. We do have one scheduled for November 1st. It's going to be on 211, the information and referral system. And then there's a number of others that Kim is organizing. So.
Great.
I'm sure you'll hear more about those as we move along, especially with the interest you've expressed.
Okay, Margaret?
So I know the rooms are packed, but one of the things I always think when we offer trainings like this, and we kind of talked about it, but I didn't follow through with that, Chandra, but to think about how you can work with the University of Illinois School of Social Work or the College of Education for continuing education, because I didn't know they were doing that yet. Thank you.
That was the most complicated part, though, because when it's the university, they have about 50 pages of rules around just doing the CEUs, but she did.
Good. Yeah. I used to do it for the school social work, and I know it's complicated, but it does increase attendance, and it, which is a great thing.
And that way they can open it to students
as
well.
Thank you.
And, Margaret, we used to partner with Prairie Center to do our CEUs. And so I actually did take that feedback and actually would work with Prairie Center.
There was a day that I had a series of meetings, and one of them went a little long, and the other one, Kim got there early. So it was with the woman from social work talking about what we'd like to do this year. She stayed a little late. Kim got there early, and it turned out they were both working on this. They were both really excited to host monthly trainings for case managers and social workers and other people involved, including families and students. And so they decided to try to work together, and it is really hard, but they're hanging in there. And that, I think you're right, like those CEUs are really important, so we don't want to let go of that. But Chandra's, we have a backup plan if it falls apart.
And just a comment, we had hoped as staff increased that there would be more of an impact
by staff in the community through organizing events that are being reported in the reports. So this is fabulous. This is really exactly what we had hoped for with the return to a normal staffing level. Let me put it that way. Not the expansion, but the return to normal staffing. The final thing that requires approval is the financial information. That's on page 53 to the end of the packet. And if for those who've had an opportunity to look through it, I have no questions, so I need a motion to approve the financial report. So moved by Tom and seconded by Judy. Any discussion, any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the financial report? Okay, opposed? All right. Board announcements. I did skip board-to-board reports. I would like to defer those in honor of Joe's birthday. do we have any board announcements? Happy birthday to you. All right, then thank you all. We may adjourn. Great meeting. Yeah, and it's not 7 o'clock.
No.
Hey.
It was nice to get kicked out. No one shunned, and I couldn't.